Accurate forecast Salenti has made over the past 30 years. The 1987 stock market crash, the clean food trend, the dot-com bust. The Trends Journal alerts subscribers to early subtle signs of crucial trends that will shape our future. It allows readers to anticipate change, recognize the implications, and take proactive strategies. Put your money where your mind is with Gerald Salenti's brilliant and indispensable Trends Journal. Go to trendsjournal.com or call 845-331-3500. That's 845-331-3500.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Thanks for joining me today. I really do appreciate it. So, everyone out there, my guest is Jim Fetzer, who has his own show on the Rents Radio Network. And one of the reasons why I wanted you on, Jim, is I want to talk about 911.
Yes, absolutely, David. Great choice.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm doing research into 911, and I've reached a dead end. I don't know where to go next, so I'm hoping you can give me some clues. So, tell me what you know. that's a broad question, isn't it?
Well, let me give you a thumbnail sketch. This 9/11 appears to have originated in the fertile imagination of Bibi Netanyahu. He wanted to devise a scheme that would draw the United States into endless wars in the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region. With the demise of the Soviet Union, there was a unique opportunity here, promoted by Project for a New American Century, a neocon think tank consisting largely of dual citizens of the United States and Israel, who promoted the idea that if only the United States would move aggressively into the geopolitically sensitive region of the Middle East and exert military and diplomatic pressure outward, they could create a new American empire worldwide that would endure for the next 100 years. They set up the use of two white elephants in New York, the Twin Towers, the World Trade Center, that were transferred into private property just 6 weeks before the event. They were rigged with mini nuke demolitions in the core columns that appear to have been directed upward in order to blow the buildings apart from the top down to simulate a collapse. But in fact, it was no collapse at all if you compare it with Building 7, which at 5:20 in the afternoon, about 7 hours later, was taken down by a classic controlled demolition. It was a 47-story building. In that instance, you had the typical result of all the floors coming down at the same time in approximate freefall speed, which occurs from blowing out all the support columns simultaneously. And you have a pile of debris equal to about 12% of the height of the original, in that case, 5.5 floors. With the Twin Towers, however, the buildings are instead blowing apart in every direction. The floors are each awaiting their own turn to be blown to kingdom come. The building is being converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust, David. And when it's over, there's nothing there. It's actually destroyed to ground level. In other words, had this been any kind of collapse, you would have had a massive pile of debris, 12% of 110 floors, which would have been around 13.5 floors, but there was nothing there. Father Frank Morales from St. Mark's Episcopal Church, who was a first responder, came on to my previous radio shows on two different occasions and explained the buildings had been destroyed to or even below ground level in relation to their footprint. And we have a massive evidence now, especially from the U.S. Geological Survey's study of samples of dust taken from 35 locations in Manhattan, which included a host of elements that in their quantities and correlations are indicative of a nuclear event, including barium and strontium, thorium and uranium, lithium, lanthanum, yttrium, chromium, tritium. Plus, we have what now amount to 70,000 some first responders and other residents of the area who have suffered from debilitating diseases associated with exposure to ionizing radiation, such as multiple myeloma, leukemia, esophageal, pancreatic, blood and plasma cancers. So the case for a nuclear event, David, is actually simply overwhelming.
Wow. So who should I look at to record to find out who did this? I mean, is it Netanyahu? Who was responsible for it all, and how did they get the explosive in the buildings?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Bibi was the brains behind the whole operation. He was aided and abetted by all these neocons in the Project for a New American Century, most of whom moved into the new government in the Department of Defense. So I'm talking about, you know, Dick Cheney appears to have been a master in terms of executing the operation on 9/11. But we're talking about Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Perle, Donald Feith, General Richard Myers, Rudy Giuliani, Larry Silverstein. These are some of the principal players. But they were aided and abetted by members of the Newark Port Authority who were Zionists, who were involved in the transfer of the World Trade Center to private hands, where Larry Silverstein immediately fired the security firm that had been looking after the building since it first opened in 1970, and obtained a new and installed an Israeli firm, Kroll, for security. Obtained a new insurance clause with an anti-terrorist a new insurance policy with an anti-terrorist clause. So when there were purportedly two planes, he could claim double indemnity, and pocketed over $4.5 billion on a $114 million investment. Yeah, Israel was implicated all over the place, including, for example, that it was Israeli firms at the airports that were involved, a company called ICTS. But you can go right down the line, you know, and find multiple indications of Israeli involvement throughout, including Dov Zakheim, who was a controller of the Pentagon. You may recall, David, that the day before, Donald Rumsfeld reported that the Pentagon was missing $2.3 trillion. The wing of the Pentagon that was attacked was the only wing that had been reinforced. It had been largely vacated of personnel and property, except for Rumsfeld directed the crew that was looking into the budget to go into the West Wing with all their documents and records. So that if you review the 125 casualties from the Pentagon, you find there are 36 who are accountants or budget experts or financial analysts who are there with the records to track the $2.3 trillion. So they had a nice target to take out.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty intense stuff, isn't it?
I have a new book that documents it all, by the way. It's entitled America Nuked on 9/11. Compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. There was a group of so-called Israeli art students. They brought in some 200 Mossad agents, David, that were described as art students, and they had groups of them in the Twin Towers, where they had free access to the building, where they were performing so-called performance art external to the building. They appear to have set up to create the cookie cutter cutouts, because the design of the buildings was such that no real planes could have actually penetrated the buildings. They would have crumpled external to them, blown up even, but body seats, luggage, tail, wings fallen to the ground, but we have photographs beneath the facades and there's nothing there. You could have reclined in a lounge chair sipping Mai Tais on those occasions and been perfectly safe.
Wow. Wow. So what happened to the planes?
Well, it's fascinating, but none of the alleged 9/11 aircraft crashed on 9/11. None of them. Two of them weren't even in the air. Gerard Holmgren, who was an Australian blues musician, was the first to notice that the Bureau of Transportation Statistics database, where it keeps records of every takeoff and landing of every flight in the United States, did not include either Flight 11, North Tower, or Flight 77, Pentagon, on its schedule that day. They weren't even in the air. It turns out that Flight 93, Shanksville, was in the air that day, and that pilots for 9/11 Truth have been able to track it, and that it was actually over Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, after it had purportedly crashed in Shanksville, and that Flight 175 was also in the air that day, and that it was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, long after it had purportedly hit the South Tower, where I obtained Federal Aviation Administration records that showed that the planes used for those two flights, and remember, the same plane could be used for many different flights. It could fly today from Chicago to Cincinnati, tomorrow from Dallas to San Francisco, be the same plane. The planes used on those flights were not formally deregistered or taken out of service until 28 September 2005, raising the question, how can planes that weren't even in the air have crashed on 9/11, and how can planes that crashed on 9/11 have still been in the air 4 years later?
What? That's bizarre. But you can see the planes crashing into the tower. I mean, it's...
You can see videos. You can see Superman flying, too, right, David? You can see Spider-Man spinning his web through the New York City, right? But you know those aren't real. The fact is Americans have lost their critical capacity. Pilots have determined from their analysis of the videos, in particular Flight 175, that was flying faster than aerodynamically possible in those videos. They committed a mistake by flying it turns out to be the image of a plane, David, faster than was aerodynamically possible. In fact, pilots have demonstrated that a Boeing 767 at that speed, at that altitude, would have physically come apart. It would have been physically unable to withstand the stress. The air is three times thicker there than it is at 35,000 feet. The turbines can't suck it through the engine, then they become functioning as brakes. The plane would have physically come apart. A very brilliant guy from the UK by the name of Richard Hall put together what he called his Flight 175 3D radar study. Let me explain how he proceeded. There are some 52 videos of Flight 175 apparently hitting the South Tower, okay? He found that about 27 of them were sufficiently precise that you could actually make a plot of a location and a time for the plane seen in the video. So he put together a set of plots. When he looked around, he discovered that NIST had a similar series of plots, which they claimed to be based upon radar data. But when he looked at what they claimed to be their source, it didn't look right to him. He did, however, discover that there actually was radar data, but that was for a plane that was 1,200 feet to the side of what he had plotted, which led him to speculate that what you had was the plane actually caught on the radar, which wouldn't capture the mere image of a plane because it wouldn't reflect the radio waves that create radar images. It was projecting a plane 1,200 feet to its side using a holographic projector and had to fly faster than normal in order to preserve the integrity of the image and flew it right into the building, which is why we have no collision effects, no crumpling, no falling apart, no apparent damage to the building initially. That appears to have been done as a special effect set up by this group of Israelis in the building, who are known, by the way, as the Gelatin Group, David. In fact, I even have a page from an Australian military manual for an airborne holographic projector which specifies precisely the technique I've just described.
Wow, that's pretty intense. I've never heard that before.
I've been doing this for a long time, David, and I'll tell you, two of my most important videos about 9/11, and they're both 2 hours long and have, 100 slides in substantiation. One is that the Real Deal episode number 100, with the 9/11 crash sites, which I did with Major General Albert Stubblebine, U.S. Army retired, who is formerly in charge of all U.S. military signals and photographic intelligence. In other words, he was the lead expert for U.S. military intelligence. He and I spent 2 hours going through the crash sites, all the evidence at Shanksville, the Pentagon, New York, the North Tower, and the South. And the general not only agreed with me that none of those planes had crashed, that each of these sites had been fabricated or faked, albeit in different ways, but he offered further reasons why I was right. And the second was the real deal episode 103, 9/11, the who, the how, and the why with Dennis Camino, where we go through all of the evidence for a global overview about who was responsible and identify the key players, such as ICTS, the secure Israeli security firm at the airports, the urban moving system in New York, which was being used by the group of Israelis who were identified at Liberty State Park, where they were filming the destruction of the Twin Towers, cheering and celebrating, where another urban moving systems vehicle was apprehended, loaded with explosives. The plan, David, had been what? Not only to attack the buildings, the World Trade Center, but to blow up the Holland Tunnel and the George Washington Bridge. But they were stopped before they were able to carry that out.
Wow. That's, I've never heard any of this before. So, okay, so the question is why? 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 What was 911 for? What was its purpose?
Well, it had two principal objectives. One was the foreign policy, namely to transform American foreign policy from one in which, at least officially, we never attacked anyone who had not attacked us first, to one in which we became the leading aggressor nation in the world. When General Wesley Clark, who returned from serving as Supreme Commander Allied Forces Europe, meaning the commanding general of NATO, returned to the Pentagon, he learned from a fellow general that there was a plan to attack Iraq. He didn't understand why, nor did the general. And Clark asked him to keep him informed. When he returned about a month later, he encountered the same general and asked, "Are we still planning to attack Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, no, sir." He says, "It's much worse." And he called him into his office and he started to tell him he just got a memorandum from Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld outlining a plan to take out the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years. Wesley Clark said, "Well, is it classified?" And the general said, "Yes, well, then don't show it to me," Clark said, "because I may want to talk about it later." In fact, at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco in 2007, he outlined the plan to take out the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years, beginning with Iraq and Libya, ending with Syria and Iran. As you well know, David, the intervention in Syria has been halted by Russian intervention. But if it hasn't been successful, it's not been for lack of trying. This was to take out all the modern Arab state that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the region, to create the opportunity for the expansion of Israel into the greater Israel of Zionist aspirations, where it would control the entire region from the Tigris, Euphrates to the Nile. That's the foreign policy objective. The domestic was to give a rationale for passing the Patriot Act, which took 35 government agencies and reorganized them into the humongous Department of Homeland Security, which was in fact modeled on the East German Stasi, the most efficient secret police ever known to be designed by the hand of man.
Wow. Wow. I'm just looking through YouTube. I got plenty of audio of Netanyahu talking about 911, so that's what I should be looking at next. So,
oh, sure, if you want to do voice analysis, that would be sensational. You could look at George Bush. You could look at Dick Cheney. They were all major liars. When they weren't even going to have a 9/11 commission investigation, David, until four widows of men who had died in New York on 9/11, known as the Jersey Girls, applied so much political pressure it was no longer possible to not convene one, but they withstood for 441 days. Then they appointed a man from the inner sanctum of the administration, Philip Zelikow, who had been involved in supervising the transition of the national security apparatus from the Clinton administration to the Bush-Cheney administration. His position in the academy before he had joined government was the creation and maintenance of public myths, David, M-Y-T-H-S. And that's exactly what he gave us with the 9/11 Commission, where he completed a draft of the 9/11 Commission report a year before he shared it with any member of the commission, and who I strongly suspect was the author of the script for 9/11.
Oh, right. So who was this man again? What was his name?
Zelikow. Philip Zelikow.
Zelikow.
Yeah.
I wonder if I can find him on YouTube.
Well, I expect you'll be able to. Probably not a lot, but on the other hand, because he was the director of the 9/11 Commission report, he had to make some public appearances. Yeah, so key people would be Zelikow, Dov Zakheim, Rudy Giuliani, Bibi Netanyahu, Paul Wolfowitz, you know, they would be General Richard Myers.
Right, okay. How do you spell Zelikow?
Z-E-L-I-K-O-W.
I-K-O-W. Okay, I'm looking on YouTube right now. Okay. I've got numerous references on the people I've looked at that talk about a sultan. What was Saudi Arabia's involvement in all of this? That's the only thing I can think of that sultan would mean.
Well, what's interesting about that is that there were 28 suppressed pages of the 9/11 Commission report that had to do with Saudi Arabian financing for the alleged hijackers. Remember, there were 19, 15 of whom actually were from Saudi Arabia, none of whom were from Iraq. But where, David, the day after, a half a dozen or more of these guys turned up alive and well and made contact with the British press. So that this is a point that David Ray Griffin, who's the dean of 9/11 studies, he's published over 10 books on the subject, makes as the very first point of his magisterial, the 9/11 Commission report omissions and distortions, that these guys turned up and spoke with the British press, which obviously means they didn't die in suicide crashes. And in fact, since some of the planes crashed, none of the passengers aboard them died in crashes that did not take place, which means that the entire war on terror is predicated upon a false proposition.
Right, yeah. God, unbelievable. I just cannot believe all the shenanigans the American government gets up to. Just staggering stuff.
Oh, it is. It is. And since 9/11, you see, with the experience they had with the Jersey girls, they realized that it's better if you're going to orchestrate an event that you do it using a script and with actors or participants who are knowing involved, so that you can't have someone blowing the whistle or political pressure, so that, you know, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, San Bernardino, Orlando, Dallas, these were all scripted events. We even have a series in Europe that are similarly staged. They're orchestrated events. Charlie Hebdo, Paris, Brussels, Nice. In Nice, David, they even used mannequins. They had a big truck there that was supposed to have taken out 84 people. There's no blood on the truck, and we have mannequins. I just published a new book about this entitled From Orlando to Dallas and Beyond, where I document the frauds that were involved in these cases.
Okay. What was the name of that book again?
From Orlando to Dallas and Beyond. It has just been published, David, and it's obtainable through moonrockbooks.com.
Congratulations. Moonrockbooks.com. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And with this volume, we've got a new printer, David. In the past, in order to keep the price down, these books are very substantial. They have like 300, 400, 450 pages with a dozen to 15 contributors. I had all the photographs published in black and white, and all the books heretofore have been available for just $20. But with this book now, or we have the possibility of having color photographs, so we're having two editions now, the black and white and color, for $10 more.
Okay, just hold the line, Jim. We have to go to a break. We'll be back right after this.
Do you struggle with your weight? Are you frustrated or discouraged? Think you've tried everything to lose weight? Tired of weight loss products that promise results and don't deliver? There are 12 main reasons why you struggle with excess weight and have a difficult time losing it. From overeating to hormonal imbalances, an underactive thyroid, even sleep problems, and even dieting itself. The truth is, the 12 causes of weight loss problems are all addressed by one product, Royal Velvet. You, yes you, can join the scores of Rinse listeners who have stopped the madness and no longer struggle with weight issues. Maybe you've heard them talk with Jeff about their amazing transformations on his show. Simply go to RoyalVelvetNow.com, click on the weight loss section, and learn the truth about the real reason obesity is a deadly epidemic that you can avoid. Then click on the Rinse icon in the upper right-hand corner, and you will be on your way to a healthier, slimmer, more youthful you. RoyalVelvetNow.com. Your life will never be the same.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rinse.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Okay, we are back. This is David John Oates for the final segment of the weekly Reverse Speech Show. A little bit of a disjointed show this morning. This afternoon. I slept through my alarm, so you had 10 minutes of a repeat for the first hour, and then we had a little bit of kerfuffle with Jim, but we got him in now. All right. Okay, Jim, I'm just searching on YouTube. They've got an hour interview with Philip Zelenko the day after 9/11. So that's one I should soon be doing.
Oh, yeah. Terrific. Absolutely. 100%. Yes.
Right. Okay. Okay. So on the Arab, Saudi Arabia side.
I was trying to explain. Right. So these pages were suppressed, and Senator Bob Graham from Florida was very upset with their suppression because he had had access to them and knew they were important and might alter Americans' perception of what had happened here, because the presumption was that this was a ragtag bag of, you know, gang of Al-Qaeda under the supervision of Osama bin Laden off in a cave in Afghanistan. What people do not know, David, is that Osama was our man in Afghanistan. He was working for the CIA. He was Colonel Tim Osman. He was instrumental in getting the Stingers to the resistance in Afghanistan that used them to drive the Soviet Union out by shooting down their helicopters and planes. He actually was suffering from kidney disease. He was visited in a hospital in Dubai shortly before his death by a CIA official. He died on 15 December 2001 in Afghanistan of his medical maladies. He was buried in an unmarked grave there. There were local obituaries at the time. Nick Kullerstrom of the UK, who's a leading expert on the London 7/7 subway bombings, Terror on the Tube, his book, is now in its third edition, published an article about it, Osama bin Laden, 1957 to 2001. David Ray Griffin published a book about it, Osama bin Laden, Dead or Alive. If you go online, you can even find that Fox News was actually on top of this case, and on 26 December 2001 already published an article, Osama bin Laden reported dead, just within days of the event taking place. Now, he had nothing to do with it, David. When he was asked about it, he explained that it appeared that there was someone who wanted to blame this on Muslims, that there appeared to be a government within the government, that it was contrary to the tenets of the Quran to murder innocent women and children, and no less an authority than William Jefferson Clinton has echoed that sentiment, saying there's a government within the government and he does not control it. This is all a set-up job to blame Muslims. In fact, already beginning on 9/11, there was an effort to blame it on the Palestinians, of all people. And then there was a series of alternatives and false leads that were set up to conceal the fact that it was actually orchestrated by the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. You can find an article about that I published with Preston James entitled Peeling the 9/11 Onion, Layers of Plots Within Plots. That is a chapter in the book.
Okay. All right. Well, this is a lot more full of intrigue than what I thought it was. I've got a lot of reversing to do, don't I?
Yeah. And if you want a couple of nice contrast cases, there's a wonderful witness, a civilian at the Pentagon, by the name of April Gallup, G-A-L-L-U-P, where an explosion took place just as she opened, turned on her computer. She had her infant child with her that day. She walked out of a huge hole in the front of the Pentagon, looked around, saw no debris whatsoever, but did smell, cordite. We have military explosive there. She would be good for a nice, authentication. You've also got Jamie McIntyre, who was a reporter for CNN on the scene at the time. When asked by the anchor about a big plane having crashed there, he replied, "Well, you might think that, but from my close-up inspection, there's no sign of any plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon." He'd be another excellent one, because April and Jamie would be truth-tellers about the Pentagon, but the host of others who are malevolent figures and deeply involved is a rather large and imposing cast.
Wow. Where do you start to unravel all of this?
Well, you see, here, I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in December of 2005 to bring together experts in different fields, pilots, physicists, engineers, structural, civil, mechanical, aeronautical. So I've been doing this, in an interdisciplinary way for quite a few years now, over a decade, David, and you would expect that given that extensive involvement, that I would have picked up quite a lot in the meanwhile. I've organized many conferences internationally. I was flown to Athens, Greece, for example, in December of 2006 to appear on a 3.5-hour television program about 9/11 that was broadcast worldwide by satellite. I was flown to Buenos Aires to be the keynote speaker at an international conference on 9/11 Truth and Justice, which was held in the National Library of the Republic of Argentina. I organized an event on debunking the war on terror in London at Friends House in 2012. I organized the Vancouver hearings in Vancouver, British Columbia in 2012. I maintained the Scholars website from the beginning, which you can find at 911scholars.org. Where for a solid year, David, every single item that went up on the website was put there by me or at my direction, every single item. So there's quite a lot you could learn there. I mean, it's a vast repository of information about the development of the 9/11 truth movement. But where, if you go to a source like Wikipedia, I discovered they had a highly inaccurate article talking about the history of scholars, than which no one knows more than do I. And when I sought to correct it, I was rebuffed repeatedly by an editor there 4 or 5 times. And eventually we had an exchange online where I said, "You're not going to let me correct it, are you?" And he said, "No." Indeed, it would be later I would have my entire entry, which was actually very imposing at the time, gutted. They took out all my research on JFK, 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, because I had participated in the conference on academic freedom in which we took, discussing the question, are there limits to inquiry? We discussed JFK, 9/11, and the Holocaust as examples. And because Wikipedia turns out to be a Zionist op, they punished me for discussing the Holocaust and gutted my entry. Fortunately, I had a copy of it before they gutted it, so I published the contrast. You can see the difference before and after they gutted it in an article entitled James Henry Fetzer Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia, busted. It's really quite a fascinating experience to see the difference, David.
Oh, my. Wow, they're trying to silence you, aren't they?
Well, they're doing what they can. They're not having a lot of success about it. Let me mention a couple others that would be good for you to do. There was a fellow named Barry Jennings, who went to Building 7, which, as I mentioned, came down at 5:20 in the afternoon in a classic controlled demolition. Rudy Giuliani had an emergency management control center there, two floors with their own air and water. Barry Jennings went there expecting Rudy would be there, but he wasn't, because he knew better. He knew that Building 7 was going to be taken down later in the day. But Barry Jennings found still steaming cups of coffee, half-eaten sandwiches. A fireman came along and said, "We got to get you out of here." He heard explosions going off. Now, this is in the morning, David, in the morning. He heard explosions going off. A stairwell was blown out from under him. At one point, he felt himself stepping over dead bodies. He couldn't see them in the pitch blackness, but he could feel. And when he got out, David, he was interviewed, and you can find interviews by him online. Yeah. So Barry Jennings, you want to interview. Now, Building 7 was not even mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report. And when critics made that point, they undertook an additional investigation, which was completely contrived, and which Barry Jennings would have been in the position to refute on the basis of his personal experience. And within days before the publication of the 9/11 Commission report, actually the NIST report about Building 7, Barry Jennings died mysteriously.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking on YouTube right now. There's a whole bunch of stuff here. Oh, this is great. You give me a whole bunch of leads to follow.
Here's another one, a classic. I mentioned these Israelis who were observed in Israeli State Park celebrating, you know, at the destruction of the Twin Towers. A resident of the area saw them and thought their behavior was completely inappropriate, reported it to the police. When they were apprehended, they were in the Urban Moving Systems van that had a mural on the side of the Twin Towers with a plane approaching the buildings. The driver told the arresting officer that we are not the problem. Our problem is your problem. The problem is the Palestinians. They investigated the contents of the truck, and there were residue of explosives. There were box cutters. There were multiple passports. There was money. This was one of several vehicles that were involved in the exercise on 9/11, where, as I have mentioned in passing, others were transporting explosives to blow up the George Washington Bridge and the Holland Tunnel, but were interdicted. Now, these guys were held in custody for like 3 months until they were released by an assistant to then Attorney General John Ashcroft and allowed to return to Israel. Three of them went on Israeli television and explained they had been there to document the destruction of the Twin Towers. The official who released them was Michael Chertoff, who had become the second director of the Department of Homeland Security after Tom Ridge had been the first. Michael Chertoff is another person on whom you ought to do voice reversals.
How do you spell that? Michael?
Chertoff.
Okay, excellent. Great. All right, this is why I wanted you on, Jim. I wanted you to give me a whole bunch of leads to follow up.
I can indeed do that. If you wanted another, a reporter who was at the scene in Shanksville, where the two reporters first on the scene both said that the weird aspect of the crash site was there was no sign that any plane had crashed there. His name is Chris Kanicki. And you can get an interview of Chris Kanicki online, and he would be interesting for confirmation of what I'm telling you, that no plane crashed there. In fact, the hull was only about 10 by 20. There were no parts of airplanes there. The aircraft, however, had a wingspan of 125 feet, weighed 100 tons, and had a tail that stood 44 feet above the ground. You want to hear the absurd explanation the apologists have given for the absence of any debris there? They claimed that it was a soft ground because it was an area that had been used for mining. Some have even suggested the plane disappeared into an abandoned mine shaft, which is not only absurd on its face, David, but where we know what to do with miners who are trapped in mine shafts. We bring out the heavy equipment and the bright lights and dig 24/7 in the hope that by some miracle someone might have survived. They did not do that in Shanksville, even though there would have been purportedly some 45 aboard that plane. Another curiosity about these flights, David, is they were all only about one quarter full. For example, 11 only officially had 92 out of 351, 175, 65 out of 351, 77, 64 out of 289, and 93, 45 out of 289. No airline could remain solvent if they flew transcontinental flights only one quarter full.
Yeah, right. Wow. It's a tangled web from beginning to end, isn't it?
Well, here's another interesting story for you. As a story began to spread, one or two of these planes was headed for Los Angeles Airport. So a lot of reporters were converging on the airport to get reactions from the relatives and friends of the passengers who would never arrive, and they discovered there wasn't anyone there. There were no relatives. There were no passengers. I mean, this is further substantiation that these were phantom flights. And in order to conceal that, they shut down L.A. Airport. They shut it down. So the reporters couldn't report about the fact that there were no relatives or friends there to greet the planes.
Jeez Louise. Unbelievable.
It is, David. It is unbelievable.
I've never heard any of this stuff. I need to listen to Jeff Rentz more often.
Well, of course, I'm the Rentz expert on 9/11, so you come to the right place.
Yeah, well, Jeff, yes, I rang Jeff and said, "Who should I get?" And he said, "Jim Fetzer." So,
I've been delighted with your work, by the way. I think this whole idea, this space reversal, is absolutely fascinating, David.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, this will be a nice test case because, you know, here are the roles they were playing. I'll be fascinated to see what you come up with. I'm giving you, you know, witnesses on both sides, you know, truth tellers and non-truth tellers alike, so you can test your methodology against a very interesting sample.
Yeah, well, it's going to take me a while to track it all down, but I'm on the case.
And if you have problems, you let me know, because I can probably put my fingers on anyone you have difficulty locating rather easily.
Okay. I'll tell you something I've found with all the people looked at with 911 so far. They talk about a hidden boss, a secret boss, like someone behind the scenes directing it all. Any idea who that would be?
Well, sure. It would be Dick Cheney, who is in an underground bunker beneath the White House. Where, for example, we learned from Norman Mineta, the Secretary of Transportation, who took all the aircraft out of the sky, except that special flights to Saudi Arabia were arranged to allow members of the Bin Laden family, who were business partners of Dick Cheney and the Bush family through the Carlyle Group, were allowed to pick up members of their family and fly them back to Saudi Arabia when all American aircraft were grounded. Norman Mineta, he'd be another good one to test, witnessed an aide coming up to Dick Cheney to say, "Sir, it's 50 miles out." He'd come back saying, "Sir, it's 40 miles out." Then he said, "Sir, it's 30 miles out." He asked, "Did the order still stand?" Cheney stood up, whipped his head around, and said, "Of course the order still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? The order has to have been to not shoot down a plane that was approaching the Pentagon, David. To shoot it down would have been the obvious thing to do. You take out the passenger in the plane, but you don't lose the personnel and the property at the target. But this plane was being used as a decoy to fly toward the building and then fly over it at the same time explosions were set off at the Pentagon. In fact, I have a good friend from JFK Research by the name of Roy Schaefer, who had a friend who was a trucker by the name of Dave Ball, who was in front of the Pentagon at the time, and who told Roy he saw a big plane fly toward the building and then swerve over it. And I told Roy, I said, "I'd like to get Dave on the air. Would you talk to him about it?" And Roy got back to me, and he said, David was reluctant. I said, well, look, Roy, explain to him that once he gets his story out, he's much safer because what he has to report is already in the public domain. Roy went back to talk to him about it, but he was found dead in an abandoned building 2 weeks later.
Oh, my. Oh, dear. Oh, wow. The plot just gets thicker, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a pretty tangled web. They were very sophisticated, trying to sow confusion. When they discovered it was physically impossible to get any planes inside the building, they had a coordination problem because, David, they were setting off explosions in the sub-basements to drain the sprinkler systems from the building, so they couldn't extinguish the very modest fires that remained after the initial fireballs consumed previously positioned jet fuel and or napalm in those spectacular fireballs, so they could have the fires to be the pseudo-explanation for the non-collapse of the building. In other words, what they would describe as a collapse, but which was actually detonation from the top down using micro or mini nukes in a sophisticated arrangement. And it's fascinating. Here's one model I give as to how it was done. If you set off these mini nukes to take out a cube of 10 floors per second, and since the North Tower, all 110 stores were standing, to blow a cube of 10 floors per second in sequence would take 11 seconds. That's what NIST says is the time it took to destroy the North Tower. In the relation of the South, the top three cubes were tilted to the side and were blown as one. That, therefore, would have taken 9 seconds, which is precisely the same estimate as NIST.
Wow. Wow. And mini nukes, what's the, I mean, it didn't create a huge big explosion. I mean,
These are low intensity. They were set in the core columns. They were like two kiloton devices that can be directed upward. They have a dialable radius, so you can set it as 100 feet, have a 200-foot radius. The buildings were 208 feet on a side, direct them upward. You could do the job. Now, there are various ways they could have been arranged. What I gave you was a model. The reality may have been more complex. I did, by the way, a Midwest 9/11 Truth Conference, the second in history, which has 14 different segments, going through all of this in detail, which you can find on my blog at jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. The second Midwest 9/11 Truth Conference.
Okay, I'll go and check that out. That's James Fetzer, give us that address again.
jamesfetzer.blogspot.com.
Okay, all right. Got it.
There was a first Midwest 9/11 Truth Conference, but it only was 3 hours. This is 14 different segments, and some of which are longer than one. Some are 2 hours. So, you know, you got quite a rich repository. I got multiple engineers and experts there. Pilots, it's a wealth of information. So the part one is about how it was done. Part two about who was responsible and why.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, hopefully in a few months I'll have some reversals for you that will back up everything you've said.
You get back to me anytime you want. I'll be glad to pursue this and collaborate whatever I can contribute.
Yeah, no, that's okay. No, right. Yeah, no, we'll have you. Let me go and start tracking down these names. I've already had some of my listeners email me YouTube videos, so we've got the whole reverse speech community out there working on it right now. So there we go.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah. I asked you this before, but I'll ask it again. Why? Why was it all done?
It was all done to draw the United States into taking out the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the Middle East. It was an operation of, by, and for Israel with the collusion of neocons in the Department of Defense, agents of the CIA and the Mossad.
Well, that sums it up, doesn't it? Wow. Okay. All right, Jim, thanks for coming on the show, man. I appreciate your input, and you've given me your civil leave to follow up, okay? So thank you,
sir. My great pleasure, David. Anytime.
Okay, no worries, Jim. Thanks for joining us. And, folks, we'll see you again next week for another David John Eich Reverse Speech Show. Bye.
I'd like to invite you to take a look at some of the most important products in the realm of health and hygiene I've ever seen, all from Trioxy. As many of you know, ozone oxygen is highly effective for many different uses in the home or office place, from purifying the air you breathe to the water you drink. In fact, the city of Los Angeles, among others, uses ozone to purify the drinking water for millions. Uses of ozonated water produced by the Trioxy Pure include washing your hands, disinfecting cuts and infections, brushing your teeth, and even washing and sanitizing fruits and vegetables in the kitchen. Meanwhile, the Trioxy Re-Ion ozone negative ion generator will clean your indoor air of pollen, smoke, odors, mold, bacteria, and viruses, and more, and will put extra oxygen into your bloodstream and clean your body just by you being there. I hope you'll drop by and visit GoHealthyNext.com and take a look. The prices are more than affordable, and the results are priceless. That's GoHealthyNext.com.
Known worldwide as the most consistently fascinating, informative, and unique program on radio, the Jeff Rentz program can be yours to listen to anytime, anywhere, whenever you want to hear it. For pennies a day, our subscribers can download any of Jeff's thousands of programs featuring a treasury of newsmakers, researchers, eyewitnesses, and incredible subjects, all in MP3, commercial-free, crystal-clear 56-bit digital sound, and take these often unforgettable programs with them wherever they go. As a subscriber, you can also listen live at airtime, online, anywhere in the world, or browse through our archives of over 6,000 hours of legendary broadcasts. Subscribe now by taking the link at the top of Rentz.com and enrich your mind with the most unique panorama of vital information and the best independent, honest journalism in radio. Look for the Subscribe Now link on Rentz.com and give yourself the knowledge you need for these unprecedented times. You're listening to The Rentz.
Are you prepared for the future? Do you know how to navigate past the upcoming dangers before it's too late and seize budding opportunities before others do? Forecasting worldwide since 1980, Gerald Celeni, publisher of the Trends Journal, provides timely and accurate trend forecasts that have earned him the reputation as the most trusted name in trends. The proof is in the hundreds of accurate forecasts Celeni has made over the past 30 years. The 1987 stock market crash, the clean food trend, the dot-com bust. The Trends Journal alerts subscribers to early subtle signs of crucial trends that will shape our future. It allows readers to anticipate change, recognize the implications, and take proactive strategies. Put your money where your mind is with Gerald Celeni's brilliant and indispensable Trends Journal. Go to trendsjournal.com or call 845-331-3500. That's 845-331-3500. 3500.